February 20th, 2013. For the Board of Public Works, Madam Treasurer, Nancy
Goff. Good morning. Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here, Governor.
Any opening thoughts?
No, that's my thought.
Okay. Mr. Comptroller.
Yes, thank you, Governor. And I read an article in the Post, and I'm sure some of you in the audience might have looked at. And it brought to light one of the most serious economic challenges facing our country, which is that a majority of Americans are heading into retirement completely unprepared, with the economic consequences of the last several years. For the first time in recent history, Americans who go into retirement are going to have a less prosperous retirement than their parents. Just think about it for a moment. 40% of Americans' personal wealth has been lost in the last 6 years. And the stock market's booming, but most of those Americans aren't benefiting at all from that. Not a bit. It's mostly well-to-do Americans who are totally taken care of as far as retirement that are benefiting from the record stock market increases. So the average 401k for Americans 55 to 65 will give them on their retirement, on average, $500 a month. So, frankly, all of this has been presented in the Post and other papers as absolutely great news because, you know, supposedly it represents some kind of recovery. But for many of our citizens, it's not good news. And I happen to think it's an issue that's not attributable mostly to the dysfunction of Washington. Yes, that does contribute to it, but we can control our own destiny. It's true that we can be taking more time to educate people on the fundamentals of responsible investing, the need to begin saving early and regularly, importance of living within our means. A lot of people think saving 1% or 2% of your salary is going to give them a good retirement. It won't. To save at least 10% of your salary. And you have to start doing it early. So I'm going to continue to push for a serious commitment to financial education in our public schools. And later on this spring, hopefully with the participation of a lot of people in this room, we're going to hold a savings summit. Madam Treasurer, I'd love to work with you, Governor, on all of the different initiatives where we can bring in leaders from the College Savings Plan, Maryland Supplemental Retirements, leaders from the banking and financial sector, to share with us the real story behind the dismally low average U.S. 401k balances and household saving reserves, and to give feedback on what we can do to reestablish a culture of saving, investment, sound financial planning here in Maryland. Fiscal decisions we make here today on the, you know, everything, state retirement, board of revenue estimates, other capacities are truly important to our state's fiscal health. But without a serious conversation with individual Marylanders about their financial decisions and the hardships that many Marylanders are facing, we can't, frankly, fully address the state's long-term fiscal health. Madam Treasurer and Governor, it's great to be with you today. And I understand you were in District 20 over the weekend.
I was at their reception when they were down here. What do you mean District 20?
This is Sheila Hickson's District 20.
Oh, they had their legislative night. And so I was over there and also stopped through at the legislative district. 17 was in the in the same place. So they were here.
The comptroller used to take a particular interest in District 20.
Yes. That was always a big deal.
Everyone was asking about you. All right, let's go to the Secretary's agenda.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. We have 16 items on the Secretary's agenda this morning. There is one report of an emergency procurement. Morgan State University is withdrawing items 9 and 10. We have special item. Item 11 is the Secretary of Natural Resources is here. Is he?
Yes.
Okay.
Secretary Griffin.
Treacherous. Board of, members of the Board of Public Works.
Good to see you, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you, Madam Treasurer. Good to see you, Mr. Comptroller. Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to be here and present an item on behalf of our department and a very dedicated 32-year employee who sadly passed away last November, Gene Piotrowski. His wife, Mary, and son, Gene, are here with us this morning. And as you'll note in the agenda item, which we are asking for your approval, it is to designate the St. Mary's River State Park wildland in St. Mary's County in Gene's memory. And as you may know, wildlands are the state of Maryland equivalent of the federal wilderness designations. They all occur on DNR properties that qualify. And I just wanted to highlight for you that Gene was someone that all institutions need as a real journeyman who would take on tasks big and large, always very agreeably and always done very well. Some of the highlights of his career included a very major step forward back in the 90s and working diligently with others in the department and a whole committee, the Wildlands Committee of outside people interested in the designation of wildlands to create a thousands and thousands of acres of wildlands on our state lands. So we now have approximately 44,000 acres of DNR's public estate that are designated as wildlands. Gene was also very instrumental in drafting and in the enactment of the Forest Conservation Act, created the plant program, which was an effort by us back then to recognize communities for tree planting and reforestation. Was also very actively involved in helping to set up the Tremendous program years ago. So for all these and many other reasons, we think Gene is very deserving of this recognition, and we hope you agree. We have a, just a little map there of the, if you want to point out the wildlands.
That's great.
So we also have, as has been customary here with our proposals to you, preliminary sign that you may want to, if you so choose, use and present to Mary and her son, Nick, who are here.
Great. Where are Mary and Nick?
They're right here.
Hey, thanks so very, very much for being here today, and thank you for supporting your dad and your husband and the really important work that he did for our state, and touching so many things about our state that makes us proud to be Marylanders, especially our stewardship of the wild spaces we have left here. So thank you.
With the board's indulgence, I found out this morning that someone I think you all know well, Ajax Eastman, if you have the time, would like to address
sure.
the board.
Ajax. Ajax.
Thank you very much, Gordon.
Thank you, John.
Good morning, Governor and Treasurer and Comptroller. It's good to be here. And I feel honored to be able to speak in support of naming the St. Mary's River Wildland after Gene Piotrowski. For those of you who aren't familiar with the wildlands, a brief history is in order. My mentor, Beth Hartline, envisioned a program similar to the Maryland, the National Wilderness Program. In 1973, he got Senator Porter Hopkins to sponsor the bill to begin setting aside areas within already owned state land suitable for preservation in perpetuity. The bill passed, and Maryland Wildlands was codified. Establishing wildlands is not an easy process because, as I like to say, nobody doesn't like to tinker with the land. Two negatives, but that says it all. Be it for minerals, wildlife, forestry, etc. Once the approval of the state administrative agencies and the local politicians is obtained, each proposed wildland still has to be approved by the General Assembly. It took 25 years to eke out the first 14,000 acres of wildlands. But in the mid-90s, under the leadership of Governor Glenn Denning and his secretary, John Griffin, Secretary of DNR, and he really was a champion of it too, we managed to triple the amount of lands to the 44,000 acres he already mentioned, representing diverse ecosystems across the state. Today, Maryland has a system of ecological treasures throughout all provinces, from the Appalachian Mountains to the coastal plains, that will be preserved so that they can evolve without tinkering. And, as Aldo Leopold said, to keep every cog and wheel is the first precaution of an intelligent tinkerer. These preserved areas hold the tapestries and mosaics of our rich natural heritage. They are the libraries and the museums of our natural world. They hold the reservoirs of living and genetic information that help us to unlock the mysteries of our evolutionary past and are vital to our understanding of the future. Gene Piotrowski was extremely helpful to the Maryland Wildlands Committee and the Maryland Conservation Council by guiding us through the process at DNR. The St. Mary's River wildland is especially appropriate because at one time, DNR was proposing to build a lake there. It's hard to imagine a lake in a county surrounded by water. The area contains a rich variety of typical southern Maryland flora and fauna. It's also an important spawning area for anadromous fish. Because the area is important, bottomland, forested, non-tidal wetlands, environmentalists were able to scuttle the dam through the Army Corps of Engineers. It was a sweet reward to have it become a wildland with Gene giving us such great support. Folks walking through the lovely bottomland forest along St. Mary's River will know the important role Gene played in helping to get it into the wildland system. Thank you for allowing me to honor him.
Thank you, Jack. Is that navigable, that the river right there? I mean,
is that what?
Can you get a kayak up in there?
I don't think so. It's bottomland. It's wetland, so it's only periodically inundated.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So it's pretty beautiful. Safe for anything but walking, I think. I hope.
Right. Well, thank you, Ajax.
Thank you.
Okay. Sir, this is on item number 11 on the Secretary's agenda?
You know, could I just...
Sure.
Ajax, what you said and what Mr. Piotrowski did makes me think, rephrasing something that was said before, truly in wildlands is the preservation of the world. Truly, not just in a poetic sense. And that really... it brings it home, you know, that we in Maryland may be preserving the very essence of biological life. Yeah. It's impressive.
Tex, you have. I wonder if we could incorporate if those remarks are written out. I wonder if we can make them part of the record here.
We do send follow-up with the remarks to the family. Okay. We also have a photographer here if you'd like the family to
good.
Come up for
yeah, we'll do that. I wonder, Kevin, do you have a picture of Gene you can pull up on the...
I do not, sir.
Okay. All right. Well, that's on Griffin. They're not bringing that. Well, let's have family come on up. And we'll do. Well, first, let's take care of the business. Treasurer moves approval of item number 11 in honor of Gene. Seconded by the comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? It's unanimous. Come on down. Come on up.
Maybe Mrs. Eastman and Secretary Griffin.
Sure. John, Ajax. Let's push our chairs back.
We're also acknowledge their daughter, Jenny, who was not able to be here today. So, and her name will be in the remarks as well.
You can Photoshop her in.
So when she's here, she'll get a hold of
it. I'm very sorry for your loss.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for all your family's done for us.
Well, you need to know that the DNR people helped out tremendously.
Yeah, they're good. Where did we meet before?
Wade-ins with Bernie Fowler.
Wade-ins with Bernie Fowler.
Yeah, you were in crutches the last time. Or the one time I saw you.
Probably because Bernie was breaking my knee.
Yes.
Very nice to meet you.
Good to meet you, too.
Here's our sign.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
John, HX, everybody squeeze in. Come on. It'll feel unnatural. It'll look good. Oops. You okay, Peter? All right. Here, let's move up to the chair. Here we go. There we go. Got more room now?
Okay, that's great. Okay, right this way, Peter. Congratulations. That's great. We'll take another one. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. We have a lot of good people that work in the state government. And Mrs. Piotrowski was saying how grateful she was that their fellow employees at DNR took such good care of her husband through his illness as well. John, I was with some of your people in Western Maryland this weekend. Watched them tag a mother bear who had decided to take up a den underneath a family's porch with very, very little regard for the lattice work. And your DNR employees were terrific. The care they took with the mom and, you know, sedating her, moving her, taking care of the four cubs, and then putting her in a safe den that they had built off in the middle of the woods. It's not easy dragging a 320-pound sedated bear when they're asleep and in a sled and up the hill. And that was good. That was fun for everybody except the bear, I suppose.
Bear was asleep.
All right. Are there any questions on the balance of the secretary's agenda?
There was another item 12, Dr. Langley from the...
Dr. Langley, is it that time already? Dr. Langley.
She has a special presentation as well.
And it looks like you're joined by a couple of young assistants from your department. Who would they be?
I am. This is Cole and Wyatt Green, and they are Volunteers of the Year this year. And they can't be here for our other presentation, so... you very kindly set us up to your office to do it today.
Good. And who are they? I'm sorry. Stand up, guys.
Stand up, guys. Wyatt and Cole Green.
Wyatt and Cole Green. Yep. You all must be related. And you are volunteers. So do you come on up to the podium here with Dr. Langley?
Well, what I was thrilled about is the enormous initiative the guys showed. Not only, and they can tell you this part, about the dead of winter running barefoot in shorts through a blowout in Herring Bay, but they actually found the remains of, we're still investigating, but at the time they did the research and thought it might be part of the 11J Marvel. They went back to the car and got a tape measure and a camera and recorded it and went to the trouble of researching it and finding out who they should report it to. If I could get adults to do this, I would be off over the moon. But
this was a blowout where?
It was in Herring Bay, and when was it? Last January, right?
Yep.
February. Okay.
And tell us, boys, what you saw. So where is Herring Bay?
Herring Bay is near.
You can go right to the microphone here.
Herring Bay is near Deal.
Near Deal, okay. And so the weather came up and took the water out of the bay?
Yeah, the north wind, which was blowing the wind, water out of the bay, and it made a very low tide where normally it'd be 6 feet deep. It was a foot deep, so it was uncovered a shipwreck, and we measured it, and it was 129 feet long and 25 feet wide.
Wow.
Huh.
And so where did we determine where what ship it actually was?
We think it is the 11J Marvel, which is a ship that crashed near in Herring Bay. That it was Matt was 123 and a half feet wide and 125 feet long, which it Matt also matched the length, very similar.
And when did it crash?
It crashed in 1955.
Wow, pretty cool. And do you live down there? Do you live nearby there?
Yep.
Like 15 minutes.
Okay, so you know that bay pretty well, huh?
Yep.
Cool. Well, and so you guys are being honored as what? You were the Volunteers of the Year?
Yes.
Wow, that's terrific. The Volunteers of the Year, Dr. Langley, for what?
For the Maryland Historical Trust and the Maryland Maritime Archaeology Program. We're very pleased that the young gentleman here, just for the initiative they took, they did all the right things. They did the right reporting. We are going to go back. They went and did some side scan with us over their site. We went out and ran over the reported site of the Marvel, last looked at by the Coast Guard in 1987, and it's substantially far apart, so it may or may not be, or it might be part of it, or it might be something entirely different. So that's why we're going to do more investigation this summer.
Interesting.
So
good
really
job,
happy,
boy.
And we managed to set up a couple of days at the local deli at the marina so that we could set up a display and have folks come in and hear about it and just ask questions and visit one before we started the survey and one at the end. And we'll do it again this summer.
Terrific.
So we're so pleased. And there are a couple of plaques we normally give, but because they're going to be in Florida in March when we do it, I was hoping you might do the honors.
Sure, we'll do the plaque. Do we have any other business to do? You want to do the plaques now?
I have other things to tell you if you want.
Okay.
Boys,
we'll do the plaques as soon as Dr. Langley's done.
I will. We have, this summer we're proposing to, we have volunteers and students who are interested in perhaps looking at the fort site off of, they call it Fort Lincoln, it was never called that, off of Point Lookout. It was last looked at prior to the existence of my program, and they actually found remaining parts of the sod walls. So we'd like to go and have a look at that this summer. It's easy shore dive. We'll have to get with DNR, or we can take our boats in.
And where does it date from?
Pardon me?
Where does it date from?
Very end of the Civil War, so right before 1880. There were three forts on that site, and the one that we see.
And the site is where? And I'm sorry, have an agenda item here?
Yeah, number 12.
Number 12.
It's in Point Lookout State Park. There's part of the restored last fort that was there, but there were actually three built very quickly toward the end of the war. It was, let me just get the right date on it for you. It was built, the last three were built between 1864 and 1865, so the one that's now out in the water, and even farther offshore, since the 80s when it was last looked at, would be one of the earlier ones. And so we'd like to go back. It was never properly surveyed because we didn't really have the people or the equipment back in 83 and 84 when it was last looked at. So we thought we'd take a look at that this summer. Because, and I did want to thank you for working with the Secretary of DBM and the Secretary, too, for supporting our request for replacing our sonar equipment. That's part of the reason we're having to limit where we go. And so we'll, when that comes through, we'll get more field work. So we're just waiting for that the session to finish, and hopefully it'll all go through and we'll get the paperwork done on that. We will go back to the 11J Marvel. We want to initiate some research on Slaughter Creek, which is off of Little Choptank. And we have one reference. It was one British officer to another in 1814 who commented that they chased five schooners up there and sank them. And so we.
In what creek? I'm sorry.
Slaughter Creek. It's off of Little Choptank, and to our knowledge, nothing's ever been researched there. So that would be very interesting to look at. It's a deep site, as our creeks go. It's about 20 feet, so we're hoping to do some remote sensing and investigate that. It's going to take more research. I mean, one sentence in one officer's letter to another, we need to do a little bit more documentation.
Slaughter Creek off the Choptank. Kevin, can you pull that up?
Little Choptank, if you can find
Little Choptank on Google Earth. Slaughter Creek.
So we're interested in that. We are.
I'm sorry? When was it named Slaughter Creek?
I don't know that, and I don't think it pertains to this. I think it's prior. It probably either it may relate to wildlife or something. I asked someone that right before I came in, and no one could give me an answer. So it may even go back to pre-contact times. I'm not positive. It didn't relate to this war. We're continuing to work with the Institute for Maritime History, who turned in this past year 26 site reports with us, our site forms, reported sites, and they reported about 30 more targets we're going to look at. They have been continuing to deploy and retrieve and maintain the buoy for us on the U-1105. We had some nifty floating keychains, and I forgot to bring them. I'll send some over that we're using as incentive for people to give us feedback on our website. They're screaming yellow, so you can't lose them, and they float. And there's an image of the U-boat with the web link to our safety standards for the site. So those have been quite popular. We're working with the Maritime Archaeological and Historical Society on their field school this year. We worked with them last year on recording two sites off Bodkin Creek. And there's a third one just south of the creek that the landowners have been very cooperative. It's right off their pier. And it shows up during blowouts, too. And we think we have an identification even on that. But that's kind of their baby, so they're very excited about it. But I said I'd come out and do their field school with them. We're working with a PhD student on what may be a site. It may just be ballast. We're not sure. He's learning the painful process of being an adult and getting permits and funding, and he keeps trying to come in and just sort of, I want to go out and dig, and we're like, no. Yeah. So St. Mary's City is working with him, and we're working with him to show him the proper process, and we'll help him with that site as well, and that's right off St. Mary's City.
And what is it? It's another shipwreck?
It might be the earliest one in the state if it's a shipwreck. It may just be a ballast pile, and that's why we want to do everything right and get the right permits, and we'll maybe do a trench across and see if there's any extant wood, because where it's located would have been fairly close to the shoreline of the historic city at the time when it was founded, so it's offshore now, but there are artifacts in and around the ballast, but I keep telling them, you can't, just because they're early in the right date doesn't mean that they're original. They could have washed in or eroded in. So we're working with him to get him through the process. But if Henry Miller's very excited that he wants it to be the earliest wreck in the state, so would we, but you have to do it correctly, so we don't know that yet. We've been working a lot with the Aquaculture Review Board, the Bureau of Energy Management under its SMART from the start, just making sure that everybody's aware of, if you run a cable through state waters, you have to be aware there may be something there culturally. And they've all been very, very good about, cooperating and seriously taking this stuff into account. We were hoping to do some work out in Washington County, because we don't get out west very often, and do a preliminary survey in the Williamsport Falling Waters area, because it was crossed three times during the Civil War. That was when we lost our equipment. But National Park Service is interested in lost as the sides again went down. So we couldn't finish that. But National Park Service's American Battlefields Protection Program is interested in funding it, but they want it to be much larger, which means we have to, and they want to look at the whole corridor, which means we have to contact all the landowners and get written concurrence that they don't mind us doing this sort of thing, as well as the water. So it'll become a much larger partnership project. So that may have to wait a little bit. That's actually the majority. We still have a lot of other things. I co-chair the Geographic Working Group with Homeland Security and Coast Guard for our emergency response to make sure that we're looking at all the sections of the base quad map by quad map. And we meet a lot with them. And this year we've got a full prep exercise for spill response. They do have us on the Maritime Security Committee, but it's, I think, more polite than anything. I said, if there's a terrorist incident, you really aren't going to worry about a shipwreck. But we like to attend because the presentations and speakers often give us insights for planning down the road. They'll say, well, we were going to do this or this, and we'll have to say, oh, did you think about, for putting up security cameras or something? And they've been very, very welcoming and very good at giving us feedback. And we revisited the safety plans for the U-11 recently, and we move our meetings from county to county, and the St. Mary's Emergency Management Center were very helpful in helping us update all of that, and we're having a meeting down there, I think on Thursday. So we do move these around a lot. So we're involved with all of these exercises as well. So busy as usual. I just thought you'd be interested in knowing what's up.
Great.
Oh, and I did. You have a draft of our annual workshop. Is March 23rd. It's just the one page from the program. It'll be posted on our website shortly, but I had to beat someone up to get this one because I'm a little earlier than usual in this presentation.
Can I just ask one related question?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you sense any greater interest on the part of students or the universities or folks because of the war? I mean, we haven't really started even building up the huge crescendo on the war of 1812.
Right.
Come 1840. But is there Can you sense any?
It depends where you are and which universities. Right now, you know, a lot of folks, if they don't have a program headed that way, they hire adjuncts. And I do a lot of adjunct work, and it's been very lean for about 3 years. They haven't had money. I'm doing something for Johns Hopkins right now, but it's on history of piracy in a grad program. And, pirates are always popular. I actually have about 5 lectures coming up through the Speakers Bureau on the War of 1812, but a lot of them are lecture series more than full academic programs. Certainly the interest is there, but it has to be, because this is going to come and go, it has to be incorporated with other things. We're already looking seriously at what we're going to do to commemorate World War I. The U.S. didn't come in until 1917, but for the rest of the world, if you want to be in on the kickoff, it's coming up next year. And NOAA has an interest in this, and we do have Mallows Bay, and Ben Cardin's been very interested in this as well and has had us up to the office a couple times. And DNR, and there is a study that was done a number of years ago for that whole corridor. So those are things we have to also have in our hip pocket for what's coming up. It really, as I say, depends which college you look at. Washington College has their whole Chesapeake environment, like a big overarching program that looks at environment and history and archaeology. St. Mary's has always had a very good, Maryland in the Wider World archaeology program, as well as the historic city. But I don't think any of them can focus specifically on one era. I still get a lot of students, but not quite as many as I'd like up this way. You know, it depends. It's going to come and go. But as I say, adjuncts have been very thin on the ground.
Yeah.
How about the scorpion?
Scorpion, what we did is, because I didn't get to present last year, to give you the update on this, the last field session, which was 2 years ago, we did determine that the vessel is pointing upstream, not downstream, as had been reported earlier. One of the interesting things was that it appears, there's a sketch Barney did, almost like the cocktail napkin sketch, and everybody said, well, that's what he thought. That's not how they were built. It's looking like it may well have been how it was built. And that's very interesting, but the unfortunate part is, or fortunate, is it's in pristine condition and it's almost fully decked. And there is a little hold in the back, which was initially interpreted as the damage. Well, there is damage, but it's also, I think, the only entry inside, so it's chock full. So this gave us a real crossroads and an eye-opener.
What do you mean chock full?
Well, it's going to be full of anything that was left in it, as well as the mud, because we thought, we were anticipating a large open hold area, which would probably be perhaps deteriorated from the last incursions or from just the age itself. And we didn't find that. We found solid planking across. So this means, how do you open this? What should you do? And this drives the cost and time. And so there were a lot of meetings, and we had to raise our eyebrows quite a bit and go, oh my goodness, this is significant. And is the Navy going to really? This is the one time, and Rod, I hate to have this on public record because Rodney will poke me with a stick, but because I've always said no, I don't want to raise vessels. This is the one time I would argue for raising the whole thing and doing it right, but there's just not that money. So we talked with the Navy. They put in various proposals for how we might do it. And we said, and we all came to the conclusion, if you can't do it right, you should really think about whether you can do it. And the President's Advisory Council weighed in with pretty much the same opinion. And so the Navy at this point, I think, made
which
a very...
What? If you can't do it right, don't do it?
Well, the Navy isn't going to come up with tens of millions of dollars to do it right. So and the only threat to the site at this point would be us. Because the Navy said, well, there's not enough money to... And the hull, to me, is more important than the artifacts in it. We can look at an 19th century catalog and know what was there. We can go to a dozen museums and see the artifacts. Artifacts were raised, some of them. But the hull is the most significant structure, and the only way to do it would be literally to rip it apart and not preserve it. And then just the Navy proposed to put it all back in the water and not monitor it and just rebury it. And I'm like... I'm not happy with that. So at this point, they it's not a closed book, but the Navy as the owner had to take the lead after the last field season because we have to oversee the compliance. And I said, I can't basically write your work plan and then say rubber stamp it that it's okay and give you a permit. It has to go through our compliance process. So the Navy had to take the lead, and at this point, they're stepping back a little bit and looking at it. Doesn't mean it won't happen down the road, but at this point they said they think they're going to work with the data in hand and the information to do some education, outreach, and interpretation with it. Because it has to
Kevin,
come.
You're looking up a different scorpion. Yeah. This was not what Joshua Barney was in.
So at that point, we are having a meeting next month on what's proceeding with it. But at this point, it's a real crossroads.
Type in Joshua Barney and Scorpion and Chesapeake Flotilla. You might get a pick.
could have brought slides, sorry.
You usually do.
They didn't ask me to.
Oh, you don't need to be asked, Dr. Langley. Okay. My goodness, you know we look forward to your visit every year.
Well, I could have. We have a lot on the go.
There's Joshua Barney.
That's not him. That looks like the Philadelphia. Oh, it is. That's not. They say it's a scorpion. It didn't. Look, well, maybe it did. That's somebody's interesting picture of it. Oh, the Navy's getting excited. This is something.
There's that. That's the napkin sketch you were talking about,
Mildred,
right?
Yes, I think it is. That is the one. You're right. And if you see, there's the gun mount in the front, and there's no evidence for that of anything like that. And see, that's what I'd want to see, because he took this sloop and rebuilt it several times, and one of the things he did was strengthen it to take that gun. So to me, the hull is far more valuable than the contents. And at the back, you can barely see where there's sort of a little hatch with a tiller in it. No, go down, please. No, not that. Down. In there, that little open area at the back, that may be the only entree underneath. So there's probably belongings. I mean, they took as much as they could, but not everything. And there could be some very interesting items. And some of the ones we have told some very interesting stories. But the hull itself is such a valuable artifact. I would hate to see it basically pulled apart, not conserved, and just put back in the river, higgledy-piggledy and buried, then conserved and put somewhere. And they're saying, well, it would cost too much.
Could you repeat more slowly, higgledy-piggledy?
It's a technical term.
Just for the court reporter.
But, well, it wouldn't be higgledy-piggledy. They would put it back inside the hull. But it is, it's a concern that something that significant wouldn't be reconstructed and put on display. And they said, you know, after the Hunley and a few of them, they weren't sure that they could get the support for it internally. And it may come around, but everybody is, you know, being asked, called to account on their spending. So the Navy at this point is stepping back a little bit, I think.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like it needs to be brought to the attention of the Secretary of the Navy.
I think it's a prudent decision. I've seen the plans for some of the cofferdam wasn't going to be large enough. It wasn't going to be double-walled. They weren't going to be able to keep it dry. It was only 5 feet around the wreck. The one in Texas was... It was overly large, but it was a much smaller vessel and much larger cofferdam. And 5 feet around it is not... That's as tall as I am. I mean, that's not enough to get sumps and pumps and people working and equipment. And I said, you've got to make it much larger. And they said, well, we don't have enough money. And I said, well, you do the project right. You don't do the project to fit the money you have. You get the money to do the project properly. So if you can make the Secretary of the Navy give more money, that would be terrific.
Bump it up to the Chair of Appropriations, too. Okay. Anything else?
That's everything except honoring our volunteers.
All right. Gentlemen, why don't you come up? We got plaques. We'll do one more picture around here. This is picture day at the Board of Public Works. Sure. Boys, you have parents? Come on up. That was a silly question. And how old are you guys?
12.
See, when they're 15, the question really is, do you have parents you will admit to? Please on in.
We need more archaeologists.
Okay, can you read this?
Thank you. So, Kira, could you tell me, and your dad?
Mr. Green.
Mr. Green, good to see you. You guys, why don't you go with Mr. Kira here, and she'll let you take a look at the governor's office. And you can sit in the chair. You can go with him.
It was great to include the boys, because once they found it, it was so nice that she just didn't take over, but included them. And
no, it's very cool.
There was lots of going back and forth with them doing their research and her weighing in. It was a really nice working relationship. We appreciate the state.
Good. Well, Dr. Langley is one of our stars. Dr. Langley, you want to go back there with those future governors and their parents? Yeah, you can come back, and we'll have your business all approved when you come back. We'll have a record of it, too. We'll do it in a careful and deliberate way, not higgledy-piggledy. Really? You're welcome to set up more hives. Dr. Langley's a beekeeper, too. She won the, she helps us raise our bees over there in Government House backyard, where we won a blue ribbon at the state fair. It was a blind blue ribbon, too. They didn't know they were doing it for Government House. All right. Any questions on the balance of the Secretary's agenda, including the items that Dr. Langley just described?
Governor, let me just point out one item. 16, the Treasurer's Office is bringing to the board the March 2013 tax-exempt equipment lease purchase financing. We put out bids and got a large number of folks that want to help us finance at a very low rate. The leases that go into IT and other important short-term capital investments of the state. But the reason I'm mentioning it actually is that sitting right there, Kena Johnson Malcolm, can you? Kena is the head of the lease debt management program, and you mentioned outstanding public servants a little while ago, and I just want you to know that this is the lady who is leading us through all of this, is doing not only the actual leasing and everything, but the accounting, the reporting, and doing extraordinarily well.
Great. And Ms. Malcolm, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for your good work. Anything else?
Yes, item 8, please.
Item 8.
Item 8 is the Department of Housing and Community Development and Neighborhood Business Works Program loan of $250,000 that we have with us. Carol?
Good morning. Carol Gilbert here from COCD. Happy to answer any questions about...
why don't you say a little bit about what the project is?
This is one of two projects in Cambridge for which we're asking the board's approval. One is in the Main Street area. This one is on Route 50 and is part of a series of vacant buildings that the town is looking to have reoccupied. And the other vacant buildings are slated for demolition. So this will help a two-block area along the Route 50 corridor that's very near the gateway to the town's Main Street. And the business will become a Popeyes. It is a pad site. It's been vacant for about 18 months. And the reoccupied site will provide about 30 entry-level businesses and some assistant management businesses.
Okay. There are two loans that are being talked about today. One is the loan you mentioned, and the other is a $500,000 loan for restoration of an aged mixed-use property on Race Street.
Right.
Which is right in the heart of the city, town of Cambridge's historic district. And that restored property will feature several apartments along with a pair of small independent businesses, local bakery, butcher shop, et cetera. It seems to fit directly within the Department of Housing and Community Development Neighborhood Business Development Program. Like the governor, I've been down to Cambridge on many occasions over the last few years. Frankly, what they're doing in downtown Cambridge is very impressive. Race Street and Poplar Streets have been spearheaded by a core of civic-minded merchants who take enormous chances, frankly, given the economy, investing in small businesses in an economically depressed business district. It's been written off, frankly, by a lot of folks, but Cambridge is doing well, at least the downtown part. It's because of people like Carol Levy and Joyce Staniforth and Steph Malkus and even Ricky Travers at Center Market. It's in the face of steep odds. They helped bring a historic Maryland community back, get it on its feet. So I think that's totally consistent, that loan. It's the second one that you referenced, which I'm not particularly enthusiastic about. I mean, to be investing $250,000 to turn an old Wendy's fast food restaurant on Route 50 into a Popeyes seems to be completely out of the mission statement of revitalizing downtown business development areas. And your own website says that you provide financing for new or expanding small businesses and nonprofit organizations in sustainable communities throughout the state. And then you have a bunch of photographs of downtown Cumberland and other communities like that. So it's pretty clear that the program wasn't designed initially to finance the renovation of a national fast food chain restaurant that's situated on an interstate highway. Popeyes is not a local business. Route 50 is not anyone's reasonable idea of a downtown commercial center. So I assume the intent and guidelines can somehow be adjusted, but it's a contortion if it is possible. And how can this loan possibly be compatible with the true spirit of this program or the original spirit of the program?
Mr. Comptroller, you're absolutely correct that the majority of the projects in which we invest are located within more historic and traditional business districts. However, on a few occasions, and we believe this is one, it is important to help revitalize what is really the kind of the gateway to certain towns and bring back sites that would otherwise remain vacant. The ownership group of four individuals who are Maryland-based folks are locally based business owners and have experience in various enterprises that make it, we think, possible for this to be a success in Cambridge. And the area is really in need of jobs, even at an entry level. The ownership group also approached three other banks looking for private financing. And that is, of course, an important precursor to our consideration is that a private bank won't provide full financing. We do believe the bringing back to activity, while a modest structure, not a historic structure, rather than letting it stay vacant, is good for the town, and they are also very supportive of the project.
Well, it just reminds me, last October, this board approved a $500,000 grant for a New Hampton Inn on Route 395 in Prince George's. And obviously those two investments stick out. I have no problem with the state investing in interstate large hotel chains and fast food restaurants like Popeyes, but I just think it should be done through DPED or some program that doesn't purport to be about the restoration of aging downtown communities. So I just suggest that you maybe go back and re-examine what pot this money is coming out of, because it sure doesn't strike me as compatible with the spirit. If it does meet the letter of the law, I assume it does, but it certainly doesn't meet the spirit of that program. Thank you. Is the mayor of Cambridge here or not?
But we do have a local resolution.
Great. Well, I'm a big fan of hers, so I'm sure she's only mildly in support of the Popeyes and is much more in favor of the other part of it. And thank you for your leadership, Madam Mayor, on the revitalization of Cambridge. It's a true accomplishment.
Just to make sure, the resolution is in support of this project as well as the other, is that right?
Second resolution is still pending, but it's on the Cambridge Council's agenda for February 25th.
For this project?
Not for this project.
For the other project.
Downtown project.
Okay, so this is the project that it's actually...
There's already a resolution in place.
Thanks. Could we get a copy of the resolution?
You can be in contact with me, Carol. We'll make sure it gets in the record.
Thank you. Do you want to defer this one until next week?
Yeah, that'd be great for me, just so long as we don't
have it.
Eight is the one that is for the Popeyes chicken, and eight is the one that...
I just want a copy of it.
There is a resolution in effect now. The earlier one, number seven, on Race Street, the council did not have a problem with. That's the one that she said that the resolution is pending on February 25th.
Well, I'm fine on the earlier one. The later one, I would love to at least hear from the town at some point that we're not going to see a McDonald's proposal and then a Hardee's proposal and a big Whopper restaurant proposal or something coming out. I mean, it's just standing the program on its head. And but I'm happy to vote against it, I guess, if you want to move forward. I'd love to hear from the town, frankly, as to why this is not invested down on Race Street and Poplar Street.
Madam Mayor, do you want to be heard?
Actually, I represent, I'm Victoria Jackson Stanley. I'm representing the Department of Social Services today.
Okay.
And not the city of Cambridge. Yes. Okay. You can invite us back, I'm sure. Mr. Bowler would like to come. Unless you just really want me to say something.
I give you permission to come out of your state role. Do you want to?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Victoria Jackson Stanley, and for this purpose, the mayor for the beautiful city of Cambridge, Maryland. First of all, thank you, Mr. Comptroller, for pointing out the two differences in the resolutions that are being presented for the city of Cambridge. We are very, very anxious in Cambridge to do whatever it takes to revitalize our town. And downtown, as you know, is really coming back. Slowly but surely, we're working forward on that. As it relates to Popeye's Southern Kitchen, or whatever the new name for Popeye's might be. We were also, as a council, looking at how does it match with the particular proposal that's being set forth to you today. And we had to discuss it, but we were of the one accord that whatever will bring life back to Cambridge on that major corridor, because we want something to make people slow down and stop in Cambridge and then come downtown. And the presenters of the Popeyes were very creative, I think, in bringing it to DHCD versus DBAM, but who am I to say that they don't know what they're talking about? I usually do, but this time I didn't challenge them. We are very anxious to do whatever it takes to help bring a positive attention to Cambridge. And if revitalizing Route 50, that building had been vacant for, I think, almost 2 years. And that's sort of a black eye that we're trying to take off Route 50 as it relates to our town. When you come off the bridge, we want you to look at Cambridge in a new light. And if this is one building that could maybe help for that particular goal, we are supportive of that. And by the way, one of our commissioners did have your exact same message, and we told her, well, Commissioner, this will bring up to 30 jobs to the city of Cambridge, which is also one of the things that we try to always enforce, that whatever is good for Cambridge, I'm in. So I'm really quite nervous, and you know I'm very seldom nervous speaking, but I'm very nervous in coming before you all today. This is my first time with the Board of Public Works, and this is a very important speech or message I'm trying to give today. And forgive me if I feel a little schizophrenic, because I really feel that way. It's like my boss back here is saying, go ahead, it's okay to speak. And my boss here is like, come on, let's speak. So here I am. So I appreciate you giving me an opportunity, and thank you for your attention.
Okay, I'm satisfied with this one. It's any other items on the secretary's agenda? Okay, let's handle. I think the comptroller wants to be able to vote against the number 8. So let's handle number 8 by itself. Treasurer moves approval.
I would move approval. I think the project is probably a good one for the reasons that the mayor said. I do think it's more appropriate, as the comptroller said, in the DBED economic development project. I do hope that this chicken franchise will work where others have not. I would hate to see us start in the business of going down all the streets, putting up fried chicken and other franchises of the like, but Cambridge does need the jobs. It is in the entry point. It does have the support of the local government, and it is not that it's not something the state and its citizens shouldn't be interested in. It's just that it's not, wasn't clear to me in reading it that this was the appropriate program either. But it's legal. I mean, it's that's not a question. So I would move favorable.
Okay. Seconded by yours truly. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Comptroller votes no, for reasons aforementioned stated. Now, on the balance of the agenda, Comptroller moves approval, seconded by Secretary's agenda. Comptroller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. Now we move on to DNR Real Property.
Thank you. Good morning, Governor. Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller.
Could I ask, just interrupt for a second, Governor, if I could.
Sure.
Could I ask the board, how many items were withdrawn from this agenda total?
There are a total, from the entire agenda today, there will be 6 items.
And is that, in your opinion, is that something that's just unusual for this agenda, or is it?
It's definitely more than usual, but it's not that it's never happened before, but it's very rare. I don't remember 6 items.
And are these items unprepared, or what is the cause of this, or is it just something aberrational?
The transportation secretary, I think he intends to withdraw 2 items, and I don't know the reasons for them. There were one item that I think the budget secretary is going to withdraw that the legislature asked just that it be held for 2 weeks and we'll come back. The 3 items that I would be responsible for, I was told that the governor's office of minority affairs had questions about them, and were only raised very recently, as in yesterday, which is why I only got the word to you yesterday, because I only found out yesterday, or this morning.
Thank you. Sorry.
Okay, sure. Emily Wilson with the Maryland Department of Natural Resources. We have 4 items on our agenda today. I'd like to point out item 4A, which we did in cooperation with the Conservation Fund. It's the Roland acquisition that was acquired at a substantial discount, but it also shares several boundaries with Salem State Forest, which is located in St. Mary's County, very near St. Mary's River State Park, which is what item 11A on the Secretary's agenda was about this morning.
Any questions for the DNR? They scored a 105.
Indeed.
Okay, any questions? Controlling this approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now. Thank you.
Thank you.
To the University System, I'm sorry, to the Department of Budget Management.
Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, good morning. There are 7 items on the Department of Budget Management's agenda for today. I am withdrawing item number 3. As Secretary McDonald indicated, this is being withdrawn at the request of the Baltimore County delegation. I hope to bring this back within the next couple of weeks. With that, I'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions? Controller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. University System of Maryland.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, Jim Sterling for the University System. We have 7 items on the published agenda. We're withdrawing item 5C.
Yes.
I suppose this is the closest I'll come to being able to find a good segue here. I just got word that Maryland students are number 1 in AP success for the 7th consecutive year in a row, according to the new report by the College Board. Last year, nearly 30% of Maryland's graduates scored a 3 or higher on AP on their AP exams. That would be 52% higher than the national average. So how about your state and your kids?
That's all of them. Impressive.
We'd like to send them all to College Park.
Or some other fine campus of the University System of Maryland.
True.
Maryland also needs them.
Or Morgan St. Mary's or the great community colleges of Maryland.
Maryland leads the nation in AP science and math participation. Last year, all 24 Maryland school systems had at least 20% participation rate among high school seniors. 16 districts had 30% or greater. Over the decade, we've more than doubled the number of Maryland students taking an AP exam. That's pretty good progress. Since 2007, we've increased the number of Maryland students taking an AP exam by nearly a third. Over the decade, we've nearly doubled the number of Maryland students scoring a 3 or higher. So, with all of that, Treasurer moves approval of University System of Maryland.
Just a quick question. Thank you.
I should have kept reading.
The item number 5, is that still on the agenda?
We withdrew that item.
And why did you do that?
It was at the request of the Governor's Office of Minority Affairs. We have some issues with the way the sub-goals were set. For minority business.
So the 26% of MBE participation is something that you're...
That's only part of the consideration. There are sub-goals for other groups that have to be addressed, and our item did not properly address it.
Well, it certainly seemed like a good project and got awarded the lowest bidder and had 26% MBE in a part of the state where... That's, I assume, is not easy.
Which item is this? I'm sorry.
Item 5. So I hope Bobcat Stadium Press Box survives the review and gets back in front of us.
And just for the record, we are in agreement with the Governor's Office of Minority Affairs that we should go back and review that.
Good. Keep me in the loop, please. And it's a good project. It looks like it had a good bid, and I'm not quite sure, obviously, the details you're talking about, but hopefully it'll get resubmitted. Thank you. That's not something we could resolve now at the board level.
No, there's some work that we need to do to document minority business participation for its subgroups.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So, University System of Maryland, agenda items. Treasurer moves approval, seconded by the controller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now to the Department of Information. I'm sorry, Department of, yes, Information Technology? No items. Perfect. Nothing gets nothing. What's that, King Lear? I think it's King Lear. We move on now to the Department of Transportation.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, and Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Acting Secretary Daryl Mobley, representing the department. MDOT is presenting 18 items. Items 18 RP and 19 RP have been withdrawn. The reason those two items have been withdrawn is we're waiting on signatures from Amtrak.
Okay. Any questions?
Move favorable.
Control. Treasurer moves favorably, seconded by the controller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed. The ayes have it. We now move to the Department of General Services, doing good service.
Yes,
doing
sir.
Green service.
Green service and great service.
Governor. And great service. Greenly.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. Just for the record, Al Collins, Secretary of Department of General Services. The department has 25 items on our agenda. We'd be glad to answer any questions you have at this time. Governor, may I also commend you on your George Washington speech on Monday night.
Well, thanks for coming in for me, Mr. Secretary. You get the award of all the secretaries.
You hear that?
The rare speech where I get to use the phrase spirit of hedonism.
It was great.
Controller moves approval, not of the hedonism, but on the DTS. Seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. And that concludes our agenda. Thank you all very much. I said,